Hello everyone and welcome back to the latest episode of Everybody Hates Your Brand. In this one I talk to Adam Posner. Adam, based out of Melbourne, Australia, is founder of the loyalty consultancy The Point of Loyalty. He brings over 18 years of specialist expertise in loyalty and customer engagement, working on clients as diverse as MasterCard, Bupa Health, Officeworks and Accor Hotels. Since 2013, he has commissioned 18 independent consumer research studies on customer loyalty and loyalty programs in Australia and New Zealand, which he calls For Love or Money. And that's how he came onto my radar when I was working in Sydney for DDB. So, settle in for a chat between two loyalty nerds. Right, so as I said in the intro, we are delighted to be joined today by Adam Posner. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Rob. Lovely to be with you and thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you as well for making the time. It's a 9-hour time difference, which is always fun to try and organise. Well, we'll start this interview in the way we start pretty much all of our interviews, which is what I call the credibility section. We have listeners from around the world, and I always like to give our guests a chance to kind of explain who they are and what they do so that when your opinions hold the weight that they should. So would you give me a bit of a background into yourself and your career, please, Adam?
Yeah, thanks. Well, I guess we'll go back 30 plus years as a direct marketer. I'm a data-driven direct marketer from the early 90s and stumbled on loyalty programs in 2007 and fell in love with the data that they produce and thought, well, you know, I'm going to go out there and be a consultant and started advising brands and businesses on customer loyalty and loyalty programs. And then also woke up and realized that there was no real bespoke research here in Australia around customer loyalty and loyalty programs. And the study, which you know about, and I was born, called For Love or Money, which is now 18 editions and 13 years in Australia plus New Zealand. So really, yeah, I'm an advisor to brands and businesses of all shapes, sizes and forms on customer loyalty that programs essentially that are, quite simply meaningful and desirable to their members. And profitable and sustainable to their businesses. So, yeah, that's what I live and breathe every day.
Brilliant. Well, you're also talking to a fellow loyalty nerd, for want of a better way of describing myself.
Yeah,
I didn't want to do the kind of same sort of questions that you normally get. It's like, do loyalty programs work? I think there's some interesting, more deeper questions to talk about. And I think the reason for that is I think there's a lot of, weight of academic evidence that shows that loyalty programs do work in the sense of they create transactional loyalty by building positive habit loops, operant conditioning, all that kind of good stuff. And I don't think we need to cover that off here. But what I'm interested in is some of the findings that come out of your latest report and some of the interesting stuff that comes out of, I think, a person we both know, Professor Yuping Liu Tompkins, some of the stuff that she's come out with. And I think some really interesting angles here. And one of those is exactly what customers are loyal to. If a loyalty program creates transactional loyalty, largely, there is academic research and your own research that shows that people become loyal to the program, not the brand. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I wanted to talk to you about is how do you prevent that? How do you stop somebody becoming loyalty to the program and not the brand? Does it matter, I suppose? And does it just require some bigger thinking, i.e. loyalty as an end, not a loyalty program as a means, if you know what I mean? So I'd be interested to know your opinion on that.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss in your one question.
Yeah.
maybe I'll answer it in two ways. So yeah, I am fascinated by this concept of, are you loyal to the brand? Are you loyal to the loyalty program and the brand? Are you just loyal to the loyalty program? So that's what we uncovered in our research. And it's talking generic. So you've got to take context here in terms of what's the brand, what's the category. Is it grocer? Is it airline? Is it, retail? What kind of retail is it? So many aspects to brand, right? So we've got to be careful about the context. And in my research, I don't give brands. I just give the general question. And we found 41% of the members of programs are loyal to both the program and the brand. So there is a quarter of people who are just more loyal to the brand only. So I think it's just a fascinating area of loyalty and loyalty programs, because to answer your second question, the brand needs to know who they are and what they stand for. And if they're clear on their purpose and what their difference in the market is and why they exist, and they know who their customers are and the offering is there, well, then, you know, that's the essence of that, the commercial, the commerce transaction. You know, I buy from the brand because I either trust, love, it's either price-based or is there an emotional connection, but there's no program potentially there. As soon as you bring a program, as you and I know them to be, so a mechanism or a structure that gives me rewards, recognition, and benefits for engaging or buying from the brand, you're adding another offering. So herein lies, are you then sucked into the structure and the points and the mechanisms that it offers, and you just want to earn and redeem, and really get caught in that habit loop, as you call it? Or is the brand itself and the products and services that it offers, you know, where does that sit on the continuum? Do you actually go and just fly with that airline because you want to maintain your status, but another airline might be cheaper? So are you just hooked into the points because you have the status that they give you? Or, you know, is the brand itself important? So it's a very interesting area of loyalty and loyalty programs that I'm only just beginning to just uncover this year. And I've had many conversations because I go in and present the research. And I've got some brands who've got, a fuel brand that I presented to, and they've got a loyalty program themselves, but they also have a currency that you can collect from a coalition partner. And so the question is, do people who join their program join it their bespoke program, or join it because they've got a currency that's part of an airline or whatever it is? So it becomes a really interesting, aspect of a program structure.
I'd agree. And I think it ties into that concept you hear a lot about, transactional versus emotional loyalty.
Yeah.
And I think there's some interesting work about like a loyalty program will find it difficult to create emotional loyalty that comes from the product, as you pointed out, the product, the service, the customer experience. And I think there's an interesting question at some point is, does it matter if they're loyal to the program as long as they keep coming back to you? And at what point does it matter?
Well, if you're not connected to the brand, then you're almost ready to be taken by a competitor. So in a way, it's fair. Almost like, if you're only stuck within the program, then the competitor can give you a better offering on their program and you switch. So really, you're not as sticky, I don't think, if you're only loyal to the program. You want this total integrated offering. I always say that, and this is the mantra I have, is that a loyalty program is not an island off the coast of a brand.
It's a good line.
And if this was a visual podcast, I'll show you. I've got a T-shirt now. You might have seen it on LinkedIn, but I've actually got a T-shirt which says that, and I wear it at workshops. And it suddenly dawns on people that first it's brand first. It's your offering. It's everything about why you wake up every day and make a living and make money and offer to your customers. Then how do you augment that? How do you add value to that for all the good reasons why programs exist with a program? So the program is another offering, and it should be connected and very close to the vision of the brand, the essence of the brand, the purpose of the brand, and then it's stuck, it's sticky, it's not an island off the coast.
I think that makes a lot of sense, and I think having been fortunate to run programs myself, one of the things we talked about briefly in the sort of pre-chats here was I talk a lot about the idea of body language. Yeah. of an organization in relation to its program. Yeah. And I've seen in the past, and just to be clear, what I mean by body language is, how do staff talk about it? How salient is it? If you're a retailer, how salient is it in your retail stores? Can people see it? Can they understand it? Is it, do the staff talk about it in glowing terms, or is it like, all right, I better ask for the, have you got such and such a card,
Yeah.
And it ties back in, I think, really important to what you just said, which is, it has to come brand out, not, as you said, like an appendage. because if it's not taken seriously by the organization, then it won't be taken seriously by the customers. And why should it?
Exactly. It all becomes a sequence of events when it's not like, as I say, when I build programs, I always start at the beginning with, where's the leadership team in my first workshop? Where's the CEO? Where's the CMO? Where's the CFO? Where's the lead head of legal? My workshops when I build programs, I want every C-suite person there, because it just shows that's right from the beginning. This is a serious, serious strategy. It's a loyalty program is an asset of consented and contactable members. So they've given you a value exchange. They said, here's my data. You're giving me stuff. Now use that with respect and dignity towards me. Show me that you know me. Be relevant and personal. Use the data I'm giving you, and plus all the rewards and so on. So the building of a program really needs to translate off the brand. I always ask the question. This is the question I ask in is like, what's the vision for the brand? And I usually get a statement. And the next question I ask is, what's the vision for the program? And I can tell you now, Rob, 9 out of 10 times, and I've done many now, I don't get an answer to the second question. They don't have one. And that's part of the job, my job to be done, is we got to build a program vision that supports, augments, adds value to the brand's vision.
Yeah, and to the types of customer that brand has. Yes. It's funny, I did a bit of work on, I used to work for, yes, I was at Disney for a little while, and we did some work with Harrods in the UK. Mm. And you would think, I don't know, you think about Harrods, you don't think about a points-based program. Mm-mm. I don't know why, because points-based feels supermarkets and, you know what I mean? But apparently Harrods customers love a bargain, despite the insane amounts of money that they spend on a regular basis. So I think you're absolutely right. It's about the brand fit, but it's also about the type of customers you have. And obviously how connected.
I'm not surprised because consumers generally have been very well educated by the frequent flyer grocery points programs. Everyone, whether in the UK, Australia, whatever, they're very well educated. So in other categories, or should we say, high value what are they, prestige brands or whatever it is, want to build a program, their customers who have been educated by all the others get points. They understand that. They know what they mean. They might not understand their value or, you might make it complex for them, but that's just more how you structure it. But in my research, it's just everyone's been educated. It doesn't mean that every program is a points program. In fact, that again is another myth that I love to bust. Another myth I love to bust is people say to me, we want loyalty. And I say, oh, what do you mean? Oh, we want a loyalty program. Ah, I say, okay, so loyalty is not a program, but I'll put that aside for the minute. So you want a loyalty program? Oh, no, we want a points program. And I say, well, hang on a second. A points is a mechanic. It's a structural element. You've got to go back to what behavior do you need to influence and what can you afford? So there's a whole range of strategy before structure. So I'm just trying to break the points story away from a program is immediately a points program. It's not.
100% agree. I also have experienced the reverse, though, which is almost sometimes a bit of points program snobbery.
Yes.
Which is, oh, we don't want a points program.
Yes.
That's a bit, a bit common kind of thing. I'm like, I think there are real strengths to points programs that are wildly, I think, are overlooked by a lot of people. So yes. It's interesting. You're right. You diagnose the strategy, brand strategy, build it all down from there, and then work your mechanics off that. And I think the other thing from a body language perspective, which caused me no end of grief when I was running the Game Reward program. So Game, in case you didn't know, it's the UK, so the Australian equivalent would be Electronics Boutique or J&B Hi-Fi, game retailer, basically.
Yeah.
And we had a points program. And making sure you set the right KPIs for staff was enormous. Mm-hmm. So one of the key KPIs we had, for example, was what percentage of transactions, and you'll have heard this a million times, I'm sure, but what percentage of transactions are done with a reward card, i.e. with a reward swipe. And how is that varying by store staff, et cetera, et cetera. We would incentivize off the back of that. It's amazing how getting your KPIs right is such a powerful lever for staff and getting and how quickly it can go wrong as well. Like we started incentivizing email capture, and I can't begin to tell you the amount of Mickey Mouse at Disney.coms I got in the email fields. But I think it feels like KPIs all tie into that conversation you're talking about, which is it structurally has to fit with the brand. The mechanics have to therefore fit with that vision, and the KPIs then have to fit with the mechanics.
Essentially, there's 7 zones, as I call it, to building out a program. we start off with the brand. What's the brand vision and what's the essence of the brand? And then we go into what's the vision for the program. So the first zone fundamentally is I call the business zone, which is vision, brand, vision program, goals, objectives, measures of success. All about like how are we going to make this successful from an internal KPI point of view, right? As you've said, so that's the business zone. The second zone is members. Who are the customers to become members? I always talk about customers becoming members because essentially a program is a proposition for people to become a member of. And so who are they? You know, what are the generational cohorts? What are the profiles? What's their buying behavior? A lot of data analytics. So there's a whole member zone in zone two. Zone three is program structure, program proposition. So what is the actual, you know, what's the format of the program? What's the model? What's the type? Is it paid? Is it free? Is there, you know, what's the package of benefits? What's the actual structure? And my latest research helps that with the sort of the nine currencies that, you know, that members care about to build the structure. So that's program. Number four zone is profitability, which is the P&L, the cash flow, and the balance sheet of the program, the financials. Like, how are we going to see the long term for the program? We've got to build a financial model. Number five zone is technology and data, the enablement. So the actual, the ecosystem of the technology, the experience, the data capture, the data governance, everything about that. Number six zone is the dialogue and communication from onboarding to ongoing, the life cycle comms, all the various surprise and delight comms, whatever comms it is, that's the whole zone six. And finally is the one that you said is the team zone. Who's the team if it's a retail business? How do we get their belief and buy-in? How do we build, you know, their cape, as you say, I call it, you know, educate, expect and excite. So the whole seven zones is the strategy of a program.
It's a really interesting way of looking at it. I'm having flashbacks of writing way too many business cases for loyalty programs and trying to figure that out. But yeah, I completely agree with that kind of structure. I think what's interesting is have you ever gone through that process and come out the other end or halfway through the process and gone, do you know what? Maybe you don't need a program. Like, what times do you, or what sort of brands and situations do you think don't need a program?
Well, the whole thing, it always starts in the beginning, which is that, you know what they say about asking why five times? So like when I get a call to say we need a program, I try in some way, shape or form to say, ask why five times. So why do you think you need a program? Why do you want a program? What problem are you solving for? Do you really need one? What is the key reason? You know, like there's sorts of why questions. So when you get real clarity on the why, then you can go to the, which is part of that business area. Then you get to understanding the behavior to influence. And so what incremental gain can you afford, can you serve up with rewards and benefits to get a return on investment? And you often get to a financial evaluation in the early stages where you can potentially turn around and say, actually, you don't need a program or you can't afford one or you have other, you can get what you want, which is often the data point, the data question elsewhere. In fact, it's very interesting because if the main reason for getting, for having a program is to have personalized data or identifiable data on your customers, you got to think about the category and the business where potentially you might have other ways of getting that without a program. So yes, we have had very few and far between, but I have pushed away or pushed back on a few people and they've gone back running into their cage and decided not to do a program.
I think you're 100% right. I think there are some, you know, to your point about the data element of it, if you're an online retailer and you're just an online retailer and you haven't got a bricks and mortar element to your business and you're a lot of the data that you're going to capture on a loyalty program, you're going to capture anyway. You've got to be sure that the other benefits that come out of a loyalty program are going to be justified. And that, I think that's an interesting conversation. This seven stages thing has kind of sparked a few interesting questions. This is a personal opinion, but I think a lot of people, when they think about loyalty programs, only think about the value of what I would call the loyalty effect, i.e. the hand on the scales that hopefully nudges somebody to come back to your brand, you know, the incremental purchases, the incremental transactional frequency and all those kind of things that come from it. Yeah. But there are a ton of different other ways loyalty programs can make money and have a financial context. So, for example, again, at Game, we would talk to suppliers. Never give customer data, but we say, okay, hello, Activision or EA or Microsoft or Sony. Here's who's buying your games and here's what other games they're buying. And would you like us to contact them on your behalf and all those kind of things? And that's a whole bunch of money. Or we would use the data to... Yeah, and I think airlines are a great one, right? The airlines make millions selling their miles.
Millions. But back to your other example of the game and where you've got suppliers, you know, I call it other people's money, OPM. So, you know, you use your partners, your suppliers to help fund your program because you've built the database, the asset, you've built the asset of consented, contactable members. And they want to reach those members, and you can segment and target and profile. And clearly, you can charge them for that media asset, which is the whole retail media story as well. So there's subscription revenue as well. So there are other revenue sources. Plus, there's productivity source benefits. There's a few. I actually counted 11 top line revenue, and I can't go through them all now. But that a program can generate. And you've highlighted, you know, the one that's very top of mind these days for retail, where there's a supplier network.
100%. And I just think it gets overlooked. We always said if the program can make a profit or break even based on what we call the non-loyalty effect stuff, so like supplier effect or whatever it might be, well, then great. Everything else on top of that is... You know, great, because as you know, the loyalty effect is hard. It's hard to prove incremental, you know, because self-selection, people who sign up for loyalty programs tend to be people who spend more money than people who at your brand anyway, and things like that. So it was always a nice to be able to go to finance director and go, actually, do you know what? We're making a ton of money anyway.
There's another hidden benefit I've uncovered for you in this conversation. You've just sparked me. I recently did a program and financial model, and what we found was before they were looking at the viability of doing a program, and we asked them what sort of volume or value of discounting are you currently budgeting for and giving away across a year, and it was $1 million or $2 million. It was quite a lot. And then I said, what happens if we take $1 million away from that and use that for the loyalty program, and you stop discounting? So I'm giving you a hypothetical. So there was a huge bottom line saving by moving some money from one action or one strategy into another, but also not, so instead of $2 million worth of discounting, they had $1 million all put into the program. And they saved $1 million. So there's a saving, not a revenue gain, which is another way of adding to profit.
Yes. 100%. 100%. And I think that there's a bigger conversation, I think, at some point to be had about the interplay between points and discounting and how those two things work together. Because we see it a lot in this country with Nectar. Where Nectar have, you can earn points, but they also now have Nectar prices and test cards on it. It's all related, obviously, to the cost of living. Crisis and all that kind of stuff. And again, it comes back to that point around if you have a currency program, I'd be interested in your opinion on this. If you have a currency program, if your currency isn't seen as strong and central and like the thing that everything ties back to, it loses its potency. Like it has to be seen as, if you start operating too many different things that are operating under the loyalty banner, you dilute it a little bit, I think. And I think it adds the complexity. And I know from your research, the idea of, you know, simplicity is one of your kind of core three sort of tenets, isn't it? Simple, personal, and valuable.
100%, yeah.
So yeah, there's a big conversation to be had there, I think, at some point, especially if you introduce a loyalty program into somebody that's already heavily price discounting.
Yeah,
I think that can create an interesting.
Oh, then that's a very interesting challenge. But that's where the very first question I would ask at the strategy table is: so what, you know, how much are you giving away per year in discounting? That's my first question. And then you've got to think about that pie. And is any of that pie? Can we save any of that pie, or can we move some of that pie to give a financial benefit to members, whatever that looks like? So, but the conversation on discounting versus points is quite different and quite deep. So, might have to save that for another time.
Save that one for another one. Yeah, it's an interesting one, that's for sure. So, okay, one of the questions we talked about prior to this was from your perspective. Let's say you don't get brought in at the beginning. Let's say you get of a loyalty program. Let's say you get brought in to help with an existing
okay.
program.
Yeah.
What are the biggest mistakes that you see made? Because they wouldn't be calling you if it was working brilliantly.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest mistakes you see? Is it missing steps in your process? Is it like, what are the things that you see that are causing most grief for loyalty programs?
Okay. Well, I was part of a study some years ago where why programs fail. And also I've also looked at where programs have stumbled along the way. And look, you're right. There's a lot of reviews going on right now, especially in Australia. There's a lot of programs, especially the financial offering, the financial layer, you know. So what's happening is when I get called in and I've got quite a few of these review opportunities, it does fit into the seven zones again. So I try and say, well, where's the problem? What's the actual problem here? And it can vary from anything like it's costing us too much. Ah, okay. Does that mean you have a sound financial model? Oh, what do you mean? Let me have a look at your financial model. So it's like that's the first thing. It's costing us too much. Okay, I really need to understand what it's costing you. You know, how are you attributing revenue to the program? What are the costs that you're taking off? Where's the cost? What's the problem there? The other thing is if you work sort of, there's been a few of what I call a franchise model. You know what those are. So the franchisees aren't buying into the program. Well, why? Okay, because we're not proving value to them, back to financials. The team are tired of the program, or they're not offering it at point of sale. Why? Well, either they haven't been educated, or there's not a system in place to inspire, educate, set KPIs, to manage all of that. Because a program is a living, breathing asset. It doesn't just sit there and you forget about it. So all of that, or they're not using the data smartly. I'll go back to the seven zones. I can pick problems from my seven zones. You know, when last did you do member research? When last did you evaluate the proposition? Are the benefits stale and pale? But ultimately, it's going to be a cost question, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely the case. I mean, I remember when we would sit in trading meetings at GAME and the finance director, basically any points redemption was just at the bottom of the balance sheet or profit and loss sheet written off as 100% margin loss. And it's like, okay, well, that's not a great way of framing points redemption, because if people don't redeem points, they don't get the value from the program. That means that, so actually we want redemption.
100%. Here's my other little mantra. Redemption is retention.
Yes. Oh, like that. Like that. That's a good one. I 100% agree with that. And I think, you know, one of the things, you know, get people on the redeeming and that's when they start to crystallize the benefits. Because if you don't do that, if you're a loyalty program that has points, you're not going to get the dopamine hit by earning 100 points.
100%.
You know, so key point. Well, I think one of the things that's really interesting me now, and we've talked about it briefly, you talked about the idea of you know, loyalty doesn't have to be points. There are a lot of different mechanics now and ways people do things. So I think you look at, you know, subscription-based loyalty programs like Amazon Prime and one that I'm particularly fond of, not that I'm a cyclist, but Rafa Cycling Club, who are an amazing brand.
Did you pay the £90 or something to be a member?
I did not, because I'm not a cyclist outdoor. I'm a more of an indoor Peloton person myself.
Okay,
I know of it, and I've got friends who are members of it, and I just think it's a really well put together program. Yeah. It's one of the few programs I think that has a real focus on community.
Yeah,
but then subsequently invests in that community.
Yeah,
because you know the clubhouses, and it has online rides, and it has all the and the app that allows people to you know get the community together. I've seen far too many programs that say, oh, we're building a community where people and yet they do nothing to foster that community.
Correct.
Like that's drives me up the wall. Anyway, things like blockchain, you know, remember that? Disappeared, but then you know Hugo Boss's program came back with that. And then the granddaddy of them all, AI. Can't have a conversation about marketing without talking about AI, but the idea of AI coming along and essentially taking existing mechanics and supercharging them. So individualized rewards at scale, for example, and highly tailored redemptions and various things like that. You've been looking at this, as you said, for a while now. What are the things that excite you the most in terms of loyalty mechanics and loyalty programs? Are there any that have piqued your interest of late? Anything that you've kind of thought, oh, that's interesting and new? And where do you see loyalty programs, I guess, headed over the next sort of 5 years or so?
I actually just saw something on LinkedIn not long ago, and I have seen articles about it, but it's up in Europe called CopenPay in Copenhagen, which is a program that encourages visitors, quite unique. It encourages visitors to Copenhagen to actually do good behaviors. So like if you walk 5,000 steps, you get a free coffee. If you use the bike, you get a free entry to a museum. If you pick up rubbish or something like that, and you deposit it here or there, you get another offer. So it's all about good behaviors. It's a very, very interesting, and it is a program because it's reward and reward for a behavior, yeah? And you know, I don't know the actual results, but I'm sure if you went to chat and asked for the results, you'll find them. But that's something that's really different, unique, using the mechanics of program psychology and program structures. And another one that I'm a big fan of, and people who know me and hear me chat, is IKEA and IKEA Family, which is and it's very much Australia, but I'm sure overseas as well. They're very innovative, and they're always looking to add solve problems for their customers through their program. I mean, they've got their meatballs, they've got their food offers, they've got their oops insurance, they've now got this new structure called Allen Keys, which is like a points program where you collect Allen Keys and you based on certain behaviors and actions, and you can redeem them for lower cost delivery. So they've got this whole new, it's a points mechanic, except they call it Allen Keys. So, that's another program that I think is innovating, changing, moving, and trying to use their brand and their proposition to add, within their program. So there's another one. And one more maybe in the US is REI Co-op, which is like that sort of outdoors program, which, you almost become a part of the ecosystem of the business by, almost becoming a shareholder in a way through the program. And it's another smart and clever way of building out a program.
I love that because I've cited that one a few times in various strategies because I think it ties into that bit again, Rafa Cycling Club and anything that you pay for, because instantly you're using loss aversion.
Yeah.
It's like, if I want to buy something outdoorsy, why would I go somewhere else when I've just paid? Yes. At a very basic level, it works on that basic psychological level. From your perspective, let's jump to the second bit of that question around AI. Is that something that is, in your conversations with your clients, that's coming up? Like, how do we implement, execute it?
Yes and no. I think that's why I put it into my latest research. So I put 6 use cases, asking members sort of their awareness and their comfort and concern with 6 AI use cases to improve the loyalty program experience, just to start getting a benchmark, to start seeing where consumers or members of programs are actually caring about or noticing AI being used. And really the main area that they see it is in sort of customer service chatbots, kind of, which we're all seeing when we book a flight or, we get these, hello, I'm Jess, can I help you kind of things, prompts. So AI is not as often a conversation at the moment, but it is definitely out there in the zeitgeist, in the world of marketers and talking about it. Technology companies are talking about it a lot. Loyalty technology companies are doing a great job in educating and advising businesses on AI. So I think it's out there. I think it's critical, and it will be more and more so, as you say, serving up, personalized offers at speed. So, yeah, it's there. It's just it's not as commoner conversation at the moment.
Completely agree with the AI agents and all that kind of stuff. I think you'll see it, and I'm seeing it already in the personalization at scale, making that easier. So taking the data, targeting personalization, next best offer, all that kind of stuff being driven much more quickly. I've yet to see it much in, like I said, in the mechanics part of the program, you know, the earn and burn part of it. But that'll be really interesting, I think, if that, the first person that kind of, you know, well, it'll be interesting because, like, do you want individualized rewards? Does that make the program seem more complicated? Do you lose some of the kind of, there's some interesting conversations there, because ultimately, I don't know if you, but all loyalty programs are just built, are largely built around that psychological loop, aren't they? In the sense of, you know, it's built around basic consumer psychology. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Well, look, that's been I've really enjoyed that. It's always great to talk to somebody who knows 10 times more about loyalty than I do, but it's always great to have a conversation about loyalty programs. Cause I think it's something that kind of can get maligned or get pushed to the side. I think as you said, an island off the coast of your brand, which I love that phrase.
Yeah, yeah. Just look at my T-shirt. Look at my article about that. If you find me on LinkedIn, you know, it's really hit a nerve. I think I've identified something that a lot of loyalty program managers and people out there in the loyalty landscape sort of like, I sort of thought about that, but I never. When you see it on my T-shirt and when I'm wearing it, kind of thing. Oh, I get it. But I've also learned a lot from you today. You know, I love this body language, and I'm not saying that only because, but you know, you highlighted this aspect, and I had a different perspective of body language, but you sort of explained it, but it's a great sort of mental framework. Almost like, what's the loyalty program body language in the business? And the way you explained it, I thought it was really nice.
Well, I think it ties back into your point about loyalty being an island off the coast of the brand, in the sense of, like, if it doesn't seem important to the rest of the business, and that's, I imagine, what a lot of your loyalty managers are feeling, because I've been there.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of feeling. Look, I always like at the end of these conversations to talk about Room 101. Now, everyone knows Room 101 from 1984, the book where you see your biggest fears and all that kind of stuff. But this is more about, I don't know if it reached Australia, but the TV show Room 101, where celebrities could come along and say, I would like to put this thing, this concept, this person, this object, whatever it is, into Room 101, into purgatory forever. And I've been asking questions of my interviewees about this for a long time. So you are the next in line. So my question to you is, you have the option to suggest something for entry into the Everybody Hates Your Brand Marketing Room 101. Well, not even just marketing. It could be something that annoys you about marketing, business, loyalty programs, that if I had the power, I could lock away for in purgatory for eternity.
Yes, there is. It's a phrase that people use, and it's as follows. To be honest with you.
I like that.
And I hear it all the time, and even I'm sure I say it, but why would you not be honest with me?
Yes, it implies you weren't, doesn't it?
Yeah. So why, when we're having a conversation and you ask me a question, blah, and you ask me and I say, to be honest with you, Rob, but why would I need to say to be honest with you? So that I'd like to put that into Room 101.
That is going into, absolutely going into Room 101. Thank you very much. Well, to be honest with you, Adam, it's been a great interview. Sorry. Yeah. I felt that was just so served up.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
If I didn't do it, I would miss it. Well, look, it's been a really enlightening 40 minutes or so, and I'm sure the listeners think exactly the same. So, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
I love having a nerd out session with you. You've certainly got a lot of other perspectives, like a good discussion and debate, different perspectives. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. A great conversation with a man who knows an awful lot about loyalty programs. I certainly learned a great deal. We will be moving forward with some new podcasts in the near future. We're going to try and increase the frequency in which they're coming out. So please keep subscribing, keep listening. If you wanted to drop a review on Apple or Spotify or any of those platforms, that would be very grateful. As long as it's a good one, if it's a bad one, keep it to yourself. And as my mum always says, please take great, great care and be vigilant out there.